What's up, Dialed fam? Happy Monday morning. My name is Derek Teal. I'm the owner and operator of Dialed Health, which is strength training for cyclists. Now, it is episode number 21, and that is pivotal because we're switching up how we do things here, and the order is going to go a little differently. So here's what's happening. I'm starting with a quick business update, jumping straight into it, and then we get into the bulk of the episode. We're talking about programming for an entire year. This is all your strength training and basically how to program your off-season versus your mid-season, look at the big picture, and even the details, all the way down to phases. We're going to go over the OPT model and rep ranges, how to work in power, why to do it a certain way. Really, really excited about this topic for you because I think it's going to be very practical. And it's also going to give you a great idea of how I create the programs that I do. After we talk about all of that, we're going to jump into an Instagram training rant and just talking about videos that are really popular on Instagram. They basically go viral, but are they actually good training videos? I'll let you know kind of both sides of it and where I stand on that whole situation. I think it's also pretty entertaining. We'll finish up with a life update. So I used to do that in the beginning of the episode, and now I think it'll be a fun, light way to end the episode. I have some funny stories from the weekend, including dropping my son for the first time, eating bourbon apples, and a really good content recommendation for you. So if you've been enjoying the podcast, please leave me a 5-star review on the Apple Podcast app with a little comment. Just say, Derek, this is... Almost said amazeballs. Like, you know what? This happens multiple times. I'll just occasionally throw out a word I never say, and it comes into my brain. Maybe it's because I'm on the mic and I'm just trying to sound cool, but amazeballs. If you go and just type in amazeballs, as long as it says 5 stars, I'm not mad about it, but you have to be willing to live with that review for the rest of your life. So whatever you say, just leave me 5 stars. All right, guys, let's do this. We talk in business, and the first form of business is the BKXC video that last week I mentioned was coming out today. However, it got postponed 1 week, so I'm sorry about the delay, but it's actually going to be up on December 16th. So check out Brian Kennedy's YouTube channel. It's BKXC. It's a huge platform. He has over 300,000 subscribers, and it's so cool, man. He came to the gym. We did an awesome session that is just really focused on information. How do you train in the gym if you're a cyclist? What does a whole week look like? What does your whole kind of program look like? And we go over one workout in particular with him. And the video is not focused on him just like crushing workouts. It's pretty much me teaching the workout, giving you the reps, giving you the entire thing visibly on the screen so that you could actually take the workout and try it yourself. So a lot of value there. It's super exciting, and we just got to wait 1 more week for it. So sorry about the delay, but it's kind of a blessing in disguise. Since that video got filmed, I also mentioned my grandfather passed away. Today, Monday the 9th, I'm recording this Sunday the 7th, by the way, but Monday the 9th is my grandpa's funeral, so now I don't have those conflictions, and as the post goes up, I can be super engaged and active and send it out and comment and just answer questions or whatever. So yeah, it worked out for the better. Other than that, Sunday night, the night before you're listening to this podcast, is the Roseville Cyclery Party. This is my local bike shop, and I've been connected with them over the years. I train the owners, and I've done a few of these holiday parties where we give away raffle prizes. So I'm bringing this up. It sounds very random, but it's just been a cool way to see the progression in my business because it just like hit me. The first year I did this raffle prize, it was the sorriest little gift basket you've ever seen, just visually. I think there was like a lacrosse ball in there and, you know, my business card and like a week of free training or something. And so it's a cool prize, don't get me wrong, but it was just small. It wasn't really wrapped well. The presentation was off. And when you run a small business, like these little things do leave a lasting impression on somebody. So I remember looking around and seeing everyone's baskets and just being like, dude, I blew it. The next year, I did a little better. Not great. This year, I freaking killed it, man. And it just happened autonomously. Like, I thought, oh, gift basket time, and I just went and did it right. And it just made me realize, like, oh, dude, I have come up to a point where I'm not trying to cut any corners, even as little as, like, this silly gift basket. Because it is really cool marketing, and it's going to be a fun party, and I think there's value on both ends. It's just that, you know, it didn't take anything for me to spend extra money to buy a foam roller, to buy some mini loop bands and some ride food and put my stickers in there. And it's, you know, a couple free personal training sessions, and it's all wrapped in the cellophane with the ribbon. And it's just, the presentation's good. And you know, you only get so many opportunities to show your brand in front of certain people. So you never know like what kind of impression you're going to make. And that little gift basket was just a reminder to me like, wow, you know, I have definitely progressed because I didn't even think twice about doing it the right way versus the first year I kind of tried and it was absolute garbage. So that was just kind of cool, random. I'm looking forward to the party. It's also Hawaiian themed. So, you know, I'm going to have a good Hawaiian shirt on with a Santa hat. And other than that, there's just some cool connections. I just recently got off the phone with a videographer who works with a really, really big podcast and does videos for them in the Bay Area. So, I mean, I'm not going to go into details about these people, that people, but I've just been making moves, man. Picking up the phone, calling people, and trying to expand the network. So that's it, man. Dialed Health Business Update is over. Thanks for listening. Let's jump into the programming for a full year and some of this Instagram talk. The gloves are off, people. I don't even give two shizzies right now, okay? We're talking about programming for a full year. I'm excited about this. I feel like this is my bread and butter. I'm feeling confident, and you could probably tell I don't even flippin' give two flying fricks, all right? And I also love alternative curse words, if you didn't know that about me. So let's jump into this, man. Programming for a full year. Of course, we got to start with the off season, and then we'll work our way to the mid season. And that's because when you discuss off season training, you can really do it by the book more so than you can with mid season training. And it also kind of lays the foundation down to by the time I get to mid season training concepts, I think it'll make a lot more sense. And when I say by the book, I literally have my NASM, National Academy Sports Medicine textbook in front of me. So it's flipped open right now, just, you know, so I don't screw anything up. Although this is the stuff I do every single day in the gym. All my programs are based off of this. And this is like the ultimate foundational level of training programming. Okay. This is the OPT model. It stands for Optimum Performance Training Model. Now, this is periodized training. Periodized training just means that you basically focus certain parts of your training at times to emphasize one goal. Now, it could be endurance, it could be strength, it could be power, but what you want to do is basically segment it so that you can actually spend enough time on one zone and one area to progress, because you just can't get bigger, faster, stronger all at once all the time. Now, if you're like a total beginner, there's this thing called beginner gains, and it's very real. You probably can get bigger, faster, stronger all at the same time. You can also probably gain muscle, lose body fat, and do all of these things at the same time, which, dude, more power to you. Honestly, that's the joys of being a beginner, and I think it's the reward and hopefully the motivation that will keep you coming, even though it's such a new thing and you're probably just trying to ingrain the habit. But once you're doing this for years and years and years, and you're just stacking all this training on top of each other, then it's going to really take some specificity to progress. You see it with on the bike training a ton. I mean, Trainer Road is a great example of taking data and using it to be valuable to progress so that you take the guesswork out of it. And you can also do the same thing with strength training. Now, for 95% of the people out there, I don't think you need to get down to the point where you have your one rep max percentage on every single lift and you have this perfect like structure in the gym to the point where you know every rep and every weight that goes with that rep for your body at any given moment. I really wouldn't expect that. There are people that get pretty dang close, but usually these are companies like Red Bull hiring, you know, a full-time trainer to work with a full-time athlete. And even then, trust me, I've talked to these trainers. You can't bring it down to a science like that, because as soon as you have these things written out and you might have the perfect full year plan, guess what? You sprain an ankle or a wrist and the thing gets thrown off. And now your whole 1 year perfectly programmed plan is kind of in disarray. So again, don't focus too much about the specifics down to that sort of a detail when it comes to your strength training. But again, lay down this foundational work that I'm going to tell you, and then you can just be as detailed as possible on top of that. So that's the real order of importance. Get your mindset there. And here we go. This is what we're working with. So the OPT model. periodized training. Here is phase number one. By the way, I would say at a minimum during the off season, you want to be in each of these phases for really a month. You really want to be in it for a month. You can do condensed phases, which we'll talk about, and I'm going to tell you how to be a little more time efficient and cut out one of these phases to make sure you get the most bang for your buck if you only have 4 months to prepare. So phase number one, this is one of five. So we're talking about 5 months of strength training here. Now, this is stabilization endurance. After that, we go to phase two, strength endurance. Phase three, hypertrophy. This is muscle growth. Phase four, maximum strength. Phase five, power. Power is really when you want to peak by. So I'm going to give you the rep ranges, and this will make a lot more sense as far as what this thing means. I'm also going to give you some exercises specifically of how they progress through this model. So this is pretty cool. So stabilization endurance is the very starting foundation of where you want to be. These are reps between 12 and 20 for every single exercise. It's at a little lower intensity. You can also work with some tempos, maybe slow on the way down, any pause reps, any speeds coming on the way up, but you don't really want anything fast, and you don't want anything overly heavy. Now, stabilization endurance is interesting to me personally because I don't want to throw you off by questioning the very first phase, but this is the one I believe can be mixed into strength endurance and still get very good results. It's also kind of weird because working with athletes, if you jump straight into stability work sometimes, they have so many compensations and their bodies are so out of whack that you don't actually give yourself a chance to break those before you go into more complex movements. Like for example, if you are doing a squat on a balance pad, but you have some compensation in your hips, well, even though the unstable nature could help trigger and fire these other muscles, they could be correct muscles to help balance your body out. You could actually be so tight and bound up that it's not enough for your body to compensate, to outcompensate your compensations. Okay, let me say that one more time. So in stabilization endurance, it's saying start with lightweight exercises that you can do on unstable surfaces in an unstable fashion. So instead of doing a bodyweight squat, you're standing on a balance pad and you're doing squats there. Now, the thing is, if you are one of these kind of effed up people, not mentally, you could be effed up mentally. That has zero effect on your physical performance to an extent, but it might help you. The more effed up you are mentally, the potentially better athlete you can be. I think that's facts right there. So what I'm saying is, if you have a really tight right hip, and then you start doing these squats on this balance pad, you could kind of just be furthering these compensations because instead of firing the correct muscles, you are just using that one muscle that's compensating for your lack of a range of motion in your hip. Like instead of you just being freely able to squat down deep, you might be kind of pinching against something and now you're leaning to the side a little bit and all of a sudden your right leg's working way harder and the stabilization almost highlights that. It makes it worse. That's just what I've seen through personal experience. So typically what I like to do is mix phase one and phase two together because they're both the same rep ranges, 12 to 20 reps. They're both at a lighter intensity and they're both generally higher volume. And what you can do instead of having a full month dedicated to stabilization and endurance, you could actually put some more focus into your mobility. Make sure that when you do the strength endurance exercises, that you can perform them in a controlled enough environment that you can do them perfectly. Like I think I think strength endurance and stabilization endurance, just this endurance phase with the higher reps all the way up to 20, it's an opportunity to ingrain really, really good form and really good habits from the get-go because the weight's lighter. You have, you just have an opportunity of just doing reps, you know, more and more reps. It's like muscle memory, literally. So the more you squat, if you are taking the time to correct some of the issues that you have, and you're able to, I don't even use a mirror to make sure that you're not leaning to one side while you squat, that's enough to ingrain better form so that by the time you get to a more strength focused phase, like hypertrophy with lower reps, you're focusing on muscle growth, that you're just in a safer, you're in a safer position to do it. And that's why it's the real base and foundation. Now, I will say, if your body is really healthy and you have decent mobility, this is kind of with more non-cyclists, to be honest, or honestly, a lot of women tend to be more mobile. And yeah, I think it comes down to how much time you've really spent on the bike. And you could be a freak of nature and have good mobility. I've seen it. People riding for 20 years, no injuries ever, and they have perfect overhead mobility, perfect ankle range of motion. I mean, that it happens, but it's very uncommon. If you're one of those people, jumping straight into stability exercises, it's probably going to be okay. And that's probably the scenario that you'd want to do it under. If not, if you feel like you have mobility issues you need to work on, I would suggest checking out your overhead squat. This is a program on my website, the mobility program, that kind of addresses it. You could also just look up overhead squat assessment on YouTube. It's going to give you a general overview, but this is going to give you some imbalances kind of in your body that you can work on. And it's also easy to find the protocols, how to fix them online. If you're a member of my website, I tell you directly how to address it. And that's my little plug right there. So that's the endurance phase, 12 to 20 reps, lower intensity, and it's just building you the perfect base to go into phase three, which is hypertrophy. Now, hypertrophy is just focus on muscle growth. This is a very difficult one for cyclists because to have muscle growth, we need to have a couple things going on. First off, we're going to take the reps down from 12 to 20 to 6 to 12, okay? We are also going to increase the sets. So the total volume potentially can be similar to the muscular endurance where, you know, you do 3 sets of 20 reps. If you do 5 sets of 12 reps, I don't know, I'm not doing my math in my head right now, but it's somewhat close, but it does allow you to get to heavier weight. But they've just found that really it's 6 and 12 and especially 8 to 12 reps is the ideal rep range to put on actual mass. The reason it kind of is, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for? Counterproductive to or contradictory to riding is because when you go for a bike ride, it's just so purely endurance focused that it can definitely mess with your gains in the gym. And I think the biggest thing to understand is that you can build a lot of strength without actually building muscle mass. Like you might not gain a pound of muscle, but you can make stronger muscle connections and muscle fibers basically just by strength training, even if you're not putting on actual size. So basically what I'm saying is, if you are an experienced rider and you are somewhat experienced in the gym, you might not notice a huge increase in actual muscle mass unless you stop riding as frequently and you up your gym sessions to like 3 to 4 days a week. And you also have to do kind of more bodybuilder splits. If you look at the podcast, I forgot what episode it was, but it's the most important variable in the gym to control. It's volume. It explains this concept, but I would say get your mind on the place where all you're doing in this hypertrophy phase as a cyclist is prepping for the max strength phase, because you don't want to go from doing, you know, 12 to 20 reps and jump into max strength phase 4, which is 5 or less reps. It's just not safe to do on your body. Like, can you do it? Like, go ahead. You can do it, but I really, really don't recommend it. Like, yeah, it is possible. It's just not ideal. So for you to go from 12 to 20 reps to 6 to 12 reps, it's really just preparing your body to go to those 5 or less reps and to build up your tendons and your ligaments and the cartilage in your vertebrae and just like the bodily support system you naturally will get by putting your body under heavier and heavier load. So you are basically prepping for max strength, and you will potentially gain some muscle mass just by being in these ranges. But again, it just depends on how much time you're on the bike and, you know, your own genetics and, you know, if you're on anabolic steroids or not. So I just always have to bring up steroids because it's just like so relevant. So Anyways, that is hypertrophy phase. Get your mindset off of muscle growth and put it on muscle development toward maximum strength if you are a cyclist. So we go now to phase four. This is maximum strength. Okay, so if basically you're in month three or four, depending on whether or not you cut out that first phase. So this is 1 to 5 reps, and now we're also bringing up the intensity. We're basically going to max intensity on some of these lifts, and you know, you want to, with the max intensity, it's like, I would say get within 2 reps of your max on a lot of these lifts. And there should be probably a lift or 2 a week where you're really hitting your max. I think you should be careful if you don't have someone spotting you, obviously. Like, I work out in the gym by myself all the time, most of the time. And the thought of, you know, doing a true 1 rep max on any barbell type lift is a little freaky. Like, it's just not smart. And I don't know. There's other things that come up in my own brain of what things that could happen. But yeah, I think that if you have someone spotting you, going to a true 1 rep max where you could literally, with a gun to your head, not get one more rep is what I'm talking about. Like the real 1 rep max, not like, oh, it's hard now. No, like, you should get to the point where it's like, okay, I could, you know, that was 5 reps, for example, I could maybe do 7 if my life was on the line. But that 5th one was a push. Okay. So that's kind of where you should be in those ranges right there, just as far as intensity goes. And then now you're also doing, you know, 4 to 6 sets. So again, the sets comes up, the volume stays somewhat similar. This is a variable right here that if you do the off-season enduro program I have, that program is the most by the book as far as this periodization goes. And you can really see this example like come into practice. Basically, I don't keep upping the sets like this textbook recommends. You know, if you didn't ride, I would totally do it. But this is kind of the point where you bring up the intensity, you gotta really, really start backing off of volume. And even though, you know, 5 sets of 5 is only 25 reps, that is a lot less than, or excuse me, 4 to 6. So yeah, 5 sets of 5 is a lot less than, you know, 60 reps that you're doing in endurance for a workout. But, and this is total reps I'm talking about. But it's just so freaking taxing on your body. I don't think you can really explain it to someone. They just have to feel it. Like, in theory, you're like, oh, it's like not as much. But like, what happens to your body when you push it under that strain? It's crazy. Just the recovery involved is really tough. And I noticed that if you just, you keep upping your sets and you have, you know, 5 sets of heavy back squat at 5 reps, dude, you're going to be so smoked. Like, I really don't think you're going to be able to ride well the next day. And again, what we're trying to do at Dialed Health is find out how much you can do in the gym or how little you can do in the gym and basically, you know, get the max results for the bike. So I think just like a 5x5 on that is like too much for most people, especially if you're trying to get in other movements and you got some balance stuff you're doing or some lunging or, you know, RDLs or whatever. So that's maximum strength. Get within two reps of your 1 rep max and kind of hang out there unless you have a good spot, you feel safe, your form's on point, freaking hit that like true 1 rep. Go to true failure is kind of what I'm saying. You know what? I might have gotten failure to mix with 1 rep max a couple of times. Just disregard that. But basically, yeah, true failure opposed to 2 reps shy of failure. Big difference. Okay, after that, we are in phase 5, potentially phase 4 if you cut out the first one. But this is the last phase. This is power, okay? Now, once you basically get to power, a lot of things change. And the biggest thing you're going to notice that changes is the actual load that you're moving, because it's no longer about how much weight you're moving. It's about how fast you're moving. I just did a Focus Friday episode, RIP, about the difference between strength and power. And basically, when you're going to sum it up, when you are in a power phase, you have to be under load so that you have some restriction in your speed. And that it should be just enough restriction to be able to fight through. So it's like, I have just enough that I can push hard through. You know, for example, we'll just say, you know, a med ball, like chest pass, for example. You know, if I had a like 2-pound med ball, I could just like fling it forward an uncontrollable like fast rate, right? And I compared an air punch, like if I was just like literally punching my fist forward and back, that'd be like no resistance almost, just my body weight. And that would be, it's just like too light. I'm not going to progress very much. But as soon as I start now throwing a med ball at someone, like kind of like a chest, like soccer pass, and it increases to a weight where now it's fighting back a little bit and you can just push through it and keep your speed up, that's a really great power exercise. But now we're talking, instead of doing, you know, hundreds of pounds on a bench press, you know, you have a 20 pound med ball and you're chucking it at someone. So very big difference. But it's about velocity. It's just about, yeah, creating as much force as you can in the shortest amount of time that you can. So that is what true power training is. And if you relate it to kind of like on the bike training, it's kind of similar. Like, you know, you do these like long intervals and they just get shorter and shorter and shorter until you have these like 10 second bursts. And by the time you're doing that is usually when you're race ready. And that's exactly how your strength program should work too. By the time you get to your peak or where you want to be at your best for the year, an event, whatever, like you should be at that power phase or just finishing it. Like at least be three plus weeks deep in it. So that is kind of like where you want to be with power and why you want to finish there. By the way, I just wanted to note, there's a reason you do them in this order. So like you build up the foundation. It's probably obvious to you, but doing this order backwards, it I don't even know if I need to go here because I'm sure you guys are like, duh, you wouldn't want to do it backwards. But it's crazy because as I mentioned, like you can't do all of these progress in, you know, strength, speed, endurance, agility, all that, power, whatever, all at the same time. But you, by doing it in this order, ensures that you're going to retain as much of it as possible. You're going to come through the cycle as safely as possible, and that it's going to ensure you're going to retain as much as you can, because you're going to hold on to your endurance a lot longer than you're going to hold on to your power. You're going to hold on to your strength longer than you're gonna hold on to your power. Like if you started with power, first of all, it's just sketchy to start moving that quickly when you're untrained. But also it's like by the time you get to the end of your endurance phase, like that power is pretty much gone. So yeah, it's kind of self-explanatory, but you wanna obviously do it in this order. So here's an example of a couple movements that are very typical in training to take you through the OPT model to give you an example of how they would change. Okay, so the first one we're going to talk about is a push-up example, and it's really actually just a chest exercise example. So starting at the stabilization endurance, if you included that one, it would be like a TRX push-up. This is a light push-up. You know, you are on the bands. It's going to be high rep and it's going to be unstable. After that, you would go down to the floor for a regular standard push-up. Okay, you probably have some more weight on your body, but it's more stable and you're still trying to hit that 12 to 20 rep range. From there, you would move up to a barbell bench press. So now you're not doing a push-up. Hopefully you can do more than, let's say 6 to 12 is my rep range for hypertrophy push-ups. If you can't, that's okay. If you can't do that many, then a push-up could still be a great hypertrophy exercise for you. But if you can do more than 12 push-ups, you got to go. You either put a weight on your back or you get on a bench press and you start moving the barbell. So now you're moving the barbell, you're in hypertrophy, you're hitting 6 to 12 reps. The next phase, you can switch up the movement if it's getting too monotonous, but honestly, it would just be dropping the reps. Like loading it up more and dropping the reps. Because again, the hypertrophy for cyclists, it's really just prep for the max strength, where we can just build the most strength without building too much mass. So you would just keep the exercise, barbell bench, do it another month, drop the reps down below 5, and then you're really getting some strength. After that, the workout goes back to either a push-up or this med ball chest pass that we were talking about. So if you did the chest pass, I already mentioned it, if you went down to a plyo push-up, you know, we're talking, oh, I didn't say reps on the power, by the way. So hopefully you're still listening and you can hear that power is like 1 to 10 reps, 1 to 10. So it should basically be an amount of reps that can be uninterrupted with how fast you're going to move. So like with a plyo push-up, if you can do 6 at like great explosive power, well, instead of increasing your weight, obviously you could just increase reps all the way up to 10. Vice versa with a chest pass, it's like you shouldn't be at a weight that you can do more than 10 before you start slowing down. So that is kind of the progression. TRX push-up, push-up, bench press 6 to 12 reps, bench press less than 5 reps, a plyo push-up, or a med ball chest pass. Now we're going to go lower body. This is like a squat example. So stabilization endurance. This is a balance pad squat. So you're standing body weight on a balance pad. You could be on some unstable discs, like any unstable surface that you can think of. You can be on that for your body weight squat. Then you'd go to strength endurance. This could be a goblet squat, unless, again, 20 bodyweight squats was enough with you as far as getting too shy of your max. I mean, not even that intense. Just keep in mind, you know, if 20 bodyweight squats is difficult for you, that might be it. For most people, I think it's going to be grabbing a weight and holding it like a goblet position. So from there, we're going to go to a barbell squat. So you're going to put a bar on your back. We're now in 6 to 12 reps. You go to from hypertrophy to maximum strength. Now you just do the same movement and you drop the reps. And then you go into a box jump. Very, very similar hip dominant movement, and it's very explosive. Now you would want to pick a height that really lined up with the rep range. So it could literally just be one, or it could be, you know, up to 10, but you shouldn't be able to do more than 10 without slowing down. That means you're definitely going too low on your box jump. Okay, so that is basically how that would progress through an entire program. And so, like, along with these would basically be multiple other exercises that you're including. This could be row variations, it could be pull-up variations, it could be lunge variations, or even like hamstring focus variations where you're going from a Romanian deadlift to like a kettlebell swing. So it's cool, man. I don't know, just even saying the word kettlebell swing gets me all stoked. So the last thing I want to talk about is PAP and how much actual power work you're going to do in a power phase. So first off, PAP. Okay, I'm going to come straight forward with this and say, I learned this from P90X. This was in P90X 2, I think, or 3. But there's some credentials here. And I don't want to discredit P90X. I love it, man. It, like, gave me my start. Tony Horton's the man. By the way, if you wanted something cool to see on Instagram, go to his profile, Tony Horton, and see his freaking shirtless photo. Dude, he is 61 years old. Absolutely crushing it, shredded abs, just got through a crazy illness that lasted for like a year. Anyways, total side rant, Tony Horton's the man. So he lined up with this guy, Marcus Elliott. He's out of Santa Barbara. I've actually been to his gym. It is freaking sick. Trains professional athletes, more like football focused. But he came up with this concept, and really through a deep dive in like actual science, like they were taking samples of muscle fibers when they were developing this and that. PAP, it's post-activation potentiation. So this has to do with power, and it's a cool concept that you can mix into your power training. And I'm going to kind of connect the dots here. So post-activation potentiation means that your body, right after a heavy strength workout, is more capable of explosive power than it would be like not after a heavy strength workout. So for example, if you were in a maximum, doing a max strength trap bar deadlift, and then you went and you did, you know, 6 reps of that, and then you went immediately into 10 box jumps, technically you should be able to create more force, because even though you would think you're fatigued from the trap bar deadlift, you actually recruited more muscle fibers. So by the time that you get to that jump, you have more fibers readily available to actually move and to work. It's like a really interesting concept, and it makes sense to me. Like, I haven't done much more of a deep dive on that besides try it. I mean, I'm taking their word for it when they say that the science is true. I can't like prove it. I guess I could look up some journal or whatever, but I've tried it, and the concept does make sense to me, because activation, when you just wake up muscles, is such a real thing. Like, I see that every day in here, where someone literally does one session and they come back in stronger. And I'm like, you didn't really get that much stronger. Like, you're probably more beat down than you were. All you did was wake everything up. So it's a real concept. And not only that, but like, I've tried it and it's really fun. It's like a really, really fun way to train. And you have to have some access to quick equipment, you know, to where you can, you know, have a trap bar right here and have a box right here or whatever. But again, it's just a fun way to train. It's a really interesting concept. And I've incorporated it to programs. I think I might do a more, I guess a high level program that incorporates it in the future. And it's just like a cool kind of idea for me and something I've loved to do over the years. I actually, a lot of my clients that train with me in person do this on a kind of regular basis, especially throughout the season. So it also kind of gives you the reality that when you're doing a power phase of training, you don't need to do every workout in that session as a power workout. You know, a lot of your workouts should be power but focused, but I don't think all of them should be, because obviously you still have to warm up. You should still be incorporating some core exercise. There should still be an endurance base to your workout that allows you to get prepped for the power movements on each given day. Because even though you're prepped over time, like you gotta freaking, you know, grease the wheels a little bit every time you start a session. So don't think that once you have a power workout or you're in the power phase, every single workout you need to do is power. No, I would truthfully say that, like, when I set up a program, it's like, I don't know, 30 to 50% of it when you're in the power phase is actual just full on power movements. Because again, you still need to prime the body and ready it on a day-to-day basis for each power movement. And that's kind of my opinion. I think that's most of the way people program. You know, if you just jumped in the gym, warmed up and did power exercises, you probably get some benefit from that too. That is an off-season overview of the OPT model, the Optimum Performance Training Model. This is how I was trained. And again, it's science-backed. It works. Through my experience, I believe in it more and more every single year. And it's pretty cool. So now we go into like mid-season training. So you've done a 4 to 5 month prep in the off season. You have now peaked in your power. You were at your first event. I'm guessing a lot of people want to be, you know, at peak power for their first event of the year. And then it's like, okay, then how do I kind of maintain what I created throughout the season and potentially back off enough mid-season to prep for the next big event? And that's a very real thing, because you're going to get broken down over the year. I mean, just even mentally, coming back to that, like, you know, you can start losing your edge if you don't have a little back off time. So, and just people like wear down, you know, it's like so demanding to do all these races, no matter whether it's your full-time job or not. Because if you have another full-time job on the side, it's like that just makes things even more difficult. So basically, you are prepped, and now we go into true maintenance mode. At this point, you're probably riding a little bit more often than you were in the off season, hopefully. And or you're just doing big bulks of riding where you're going to events and you're just riding for 4 days in a row, and then you need like a couple of days off, an off day. Hopefully you're doing mobility, some form of like yoga or stretching or foam rolling or whatever, instead of just like not moving after this big like event. You want to ramp down a little bit. There's usually travel involved, and there's just so many reasons to move like post event. But then you're like, okay, I really only have time to do one strength workout until my next event, or I have like 3 weeks, or I have like 5 weeks until the next event. So that's why I created like the mid-season enduro program that I did to follow up the off-season program. And basically what you see is it's slightly more intense. I think that makes sense, because for one, you're getting like one opportunity to get this in midweek, most likely for a lot of people. And for two, you just came through an entire off-season prep program, so that jumping into a little higher intensity workout should be okay. So by the time you get into this mid-season workout, it really is dependent on how much time is between each event. So it's kind of confusing when you look at the program I put out. And again, I'm not just trying to like plug my website, but it's just what I have created because of this need. So basically, if you look at the scheduling, it has, you know, less than 1 week out from an event. What do you do? Up to 2 weeks, 3 weeks, all the way up to 6 weeks plus. So you want to basically start at power and then kind of like rewind and then bring it back. So basically, okay, if you just did a whole power phase, you have your first event, that next week after you recover, you should probably hit just one more power workout. And maybe, depending on your time before the next event, you go full intensity or you just do 80% intensity, but you keep the movement there. Or maybe you just do a lower intensity for the workout and keep the power as fast as possible, and then, you know, you have enough time to recover. Now, maybe you're 2 weeks out. I'd probably stick to power workouts. More than 2 weeks out, you want to actually start bringing it back to some strength work, because again, you need that natural dip. You're not going to just maintain this level of power like the whole season. And the thing is, because your power is really relative to how strong you are, there's like so many little debates I'm thinking about in my head. But just for the simplicity of the conversation, like the overview, it's like your power, you're only going to be as powerful as strong you were, I guess, in the phase before. I'm having a hard time saying that for some reason, but you need to back down to strength workouts if you have more than a 2-week gap, because you have to keep that base of strength there so that when you go for the power effort, the base is still strong. Because like as you're hitting these power workouts, your base is going to slowly like break down and crumble, and your power is probably going to get like a little lower, a little lower, a little lower, unless you realize, okay, I have 2 weeks till my next event. I'm going to back off this power workout. I'm going to do 1 week of more like hypertrophy strength training, and then, or I'm going to keep the volume low and do some max strength. I think this is kind of a personal thing for you. And then the one workout before I do my event, I'm going to hit a power workout again. Or the two workouts before the event are going to be power workouts. So then all you do is start reversing the order if you have more time in between each event. So now you're up to like, I don't know, 5 weeks out from an event. So you're like, okay, I'm going all the way back to some endurance phase. I'll do that for a week. I'll do two hypertrophy workouts, 2 weeks of hypertrophy and then 1 week of power. Or I'm going to go back to hypertrophy and then max strength and then power. And depending on those, basically I would just say, if you're feeling really burnt out, go back to endurance phase. Like give your body some time to recover as far as the intensity goes. But if you're feeling good, just like you could stay in the hypertrophy, go to max strength and then back to power. And then if you have more than 6 weeks off, you should basically do like a 2-week mini cycle of each phase until your next event. And like I have that laid out for people, but until you kind of hear it, this is what we're talking about today in the podcast. It's hard to kind of understand that, but you just reverse the order back down because it gives you an opportunity to rest. It keeps your base strong and it also keeps you prepped for your event. You know, like there's a good chance by the end of your in-season events and all that, you're going to be a little less strong than you were. And your power is probably going to start like fading toward the end. It depends on how many events you do. But I would expect that a little bit. And then when you go back to your rebuild phase, you just, you know, the next off season, you're going to jump past where you ended ended the previous off season, pretty shortly. As long as you stay healthy and everything like that. So that is how you train mid season. Don't overcomplicate it. Just kind of like refer to this OPT model. You can look it up on Google. I don't expect you to have the textbook like I do, but you could always come back to this podcast too if you need a reminder on how to do that. So really cool, man. And then again, I guess I'm just going to say it now. If you needed a good reminder of this, go to the website. There's a 7-day free trial if you really don't want to sign up. And you can literally check out the free trial. Go through the programs, man. Just like look at them. Look at the off-season enduro program and look at the mid-season enduro program. Those two are the most based off the book. And then actually the XC training program is really, really by the book, but it's way more focused on stability throughout the program. Gosh, I love that program. I'm stoked even talking about it. So those are really, really good examples for you there. So that is it, dude. I think we just absolutely crushed that. That is programming for a full year on a very basic level. I hope that gives you a lot of clarity and a lot of confidence in what you're doing. If you have questions on that specifically, please reach out to me. Like I love talking about this. And like I said, you can go straight to the website, kind of find out for yourself, do your own digging. And I guess the last thing I would say after talking about all this is that, you know, it takes a lot of self-discovery through this entire process and the willingness to deep dive and learn the information yourself. You know, I'll be honest, sometimes I get questions that are so shallow in the sense of like, I can tell this person is so like, they're lazy. They don't want to find the information and they just like, they want someone to spoon feed it to them. And it's kind of sucks because I'm like, you could have found that on Google in 30 seconds. Like, why are you asking me? Is like how I can feel. So again, I'm not saying that wow. Let me grab a sip of water here. Okay. So I'm not trying to scare you off from asking me a question, but I'm just saying like a lot of this stuff, it's just so readily available and out there that, you know, if you can't find it on Google in a second, then all of a sudden now, like it'll make your question more thoughtful and specific to you, or you'll just find out the information and apply it. But I don't know, man. You know, there's so much info out there, including this podcast right here. It's going to take some time to try it and to like research it. Watch some videos. You know, even if you do one of my programs, like you have to watch the video to know the exercise. Like you have to do a little homework before you start. Just like using anything, man. You buy a new car, you're going to sit in that thing for an hour the first day and like figure out how to use the screen and all that stuff. So it's like no different. It's just preparation. So anyways, crush it, you guys. That was a sick topic. I'm excited now to finish up with this Instagram convo, and let's just jump into it. My neck, my back, my body hurts because I tried that video off Instagram and now I'm injured. Okay, that pretty much sums up Instagram training videos, so... Yeah, you guys, honestly, man, Instagram training videos are so absurd. Don't get me wrong, there is really, really quality content out there. You know, I'd like to think that I put out good content that really helps people do the right thing in the gym. But there's a lot of stuff out there that is so over the top that I would just never want anyone to confuse it for what training really is. You know, there's videos that are more so like feats of athleticism, I guess. I mean, on the general fitness side, they get extremely douchey. I mean, maybe you've even seen one where a guy is just like full on sprinting at the start of the video. He's got like no shirt on with a weight vest and he's got a oxygen training mask on and he's sprinting and then he jumps over something like high, a box or something, and then he flips a tire and then he grabs a bar that's just there all of a sudden and he does an overhead squat and then he's all of a sudden doing these push-up variations that look ridiculous, and they are ridiculous. Dumb. And then he's on a pull-up bar, you know, doing like one-handed pull-ups, and there's like naked girls walking by and like explosions in the background. It's just so douchey. And the thing is, it's eye-catching. Like it you almost like have to stop to like look at it. And don't get me wrong, like it's not like any of those things are easy to do, but yeah, it's just not what training is. And I mean, I guess if you think that it's actually cool videos like that, I mean, you have your own douchebag problems you need to worry about. But I mean, I don't think that us from cycling culture would see that and think it's like cool. But yeah, you see it and you're like, oh, is this what like high level, you know, workouts look like? The answer is no. Now, really, when you bring it, that's like the extreme, by the way, when you bring it back to like our industry, I think I get sent and tagged in more of Kate Courtney's videos than anybody. It's at Kate plus Fate on Instagram if you don't follow her. It's a great follow, dude. She does such a good job of walking that fine line between getting eye-catching posts of really unique exercises that get a lot of engagement and just start a lot of conversation versus things that are just like so ridiculous they'd never be practical. And I think that a lot of people, I'll even see in the comments that people are like arguing about whether or not you should be doing it. And she's even pretty vocal. Like a lot of the stability balance stuff that she does, she talks about how she'll do it in between sets and as kind of like a, you know, working recovery. I forget what Nina Schroeder called them. Maybe you can comment below, but he called them something like, it's cognitive recovery, I think. And basically, it's like your body's recovering physically, but while you're doing that, the instability of some activity where you're like, I don't know, juggling on like a balance board is actually, you're just working on your coordination and things like that in the meantime. So it can be a useful way to spend your time, but it's just tough to implement without it being a waste of time. Because for one, I just got to say, most people have such flaws in their foundational mobility and their strength to begin with that just addressing those through very simple movements is going to do them more than like some ridiculous stability exercise. That's just facts right there, 100%. But when you do these stability exercises, they got to be close enough that you just have to be specific on what you're trying to accomplish, I guess. Because, you know, for one, I've seen of Ryan Hughes, Rhino Global is his Instagram handle. I want to say I admire this guy a ton for the Rhino Power brand he's built and everything. But I remember a few years ago, he posted this video that just like triggered me. And I would say this is probably in the prime of me like trying to figure out strength training for cyclists and just like what's important and what isn't. It wasn't good timing for me to see it, but I kid you not, he's standing on a Swiss ball, like a big stability ball, standing up, in one arm, he has a, like, it's called like a wobble stick. Basically, it's this thing that you hold a grip and it almost looks like a bow and arrow, and you just shake it back and forth and it wobbles. But as it does that, it creates a lot of instability. So it's kind of a cool tool, but he's holding it out with like his right hand, like shaking that thing. And then in his other hand, he has a rope tied to a medicine ball. I'm not making this up. And he's swirling it over his head like he's trying, I don't know, like a tornado or something. Or he's a friggin' cowboy. Like a. I just remember seeing it and being like fired up, dude. And it's so dumb. I mean, looking back, like, I kind of get the concept now. I mean, it's very eye-catching. Like, it kind of makes you want to know more about this person and what they're doing. So in that way, it works. And again, does he have an explanation for it? I'm sure he does. I just really respect a lot that he does. So it'd be interesting to talk about. But on the flip side, I have personally tried things that are close to that that I would genuinely say are effective. Like, for example, if I stand on an endo board and do some rope slams with a battle rope, it's one of those things where I tried it being like, yeah, let me just try this and see. And then I was like, whoa, this is actually really good. Like, I'm almost surprised at how much this feels like riding, and I can see why it would be useful. So yeah, it's kind of an interesting line you have to follow as a fitness person to engage people. But I just, the only problem I have with it is that it can basically confuse people on how they should spend their time in the gym. But again, it's not the person's fault posting. It's more so someone doing the right amount of research to understanding, oh, okay, this is like a fun thing that has some benefit, but it's not like the basic foundation of your actual program. So just keep those in mind. And I would say, dude, yeah, go follow both those people if you want some cool like influence and gym motivation or whatever. And yeah, shout out to Kate Courtney for just the good job she does like balancing that stuff out. It's really, really cool. With that being said, though, I also get kind of triggered by workouts that are so closely focused on being, I guess, specific for mountain biking or road cycling or moto or whatever. Like, when you are trying so hard to emulate riding in the gym that you are literally like bringing handlebars into the gym to work with. And again, this is like might be controversial to say because like Nino and some like world champions and people are doing this. But when you're trying that hard to emulate it in the gym, I think most people are missing the point. The point in the gym is to do what you can't do already on the bike. Like, if you went in a very extended period of time without riding, I understand why you would do that. Like, why you would bring your handlebars in the gym, and there's even a product they make to like attach your bars to whatever, and or you put them on a stability ball, whatever. I can see why you'd be like, okay, I'm going to be on a rip row for half the workout, and then I'm doing these like handlebar pushups, and then I'm doing these like split stance things to like be like I'm standing on the pedals or whatever. You know, like if you really can't spend the time on the bike, I think it would help. It would probably be a good option. But also, if you're riding, you know, once or twice a week, even at the minimum, hopefully that's the minimum you're riding, then, especially if you're riding more like 3+ days a week, like a lot of people are. Like, the last thing you want to do is just more of the same thing in the gym. It really is a very ineffective way to use your time. Most people, again, are going to benefit from a basic push-up than a push-up on handlebars, or even like a just use a TRX. Like, it's so close to that, and it's not like the same exact thing, because we're trying to like make you a more complete package as far as your strength and your fitness goes. And that's the only way you're going to build your injury prevention and work on your weaknesses and just, again, things you can't work on the bike. So kind of keep that in your head, because the more regular you're riding, the less there is a need for that in the gym. And that's just kind of my stance on that. So yeah, try it out. I think it's fun to experiment with these things. I do it. I'm even posting more. I'm personally trying to walk that line a little bit more. And I don't know. I just think it's like a fun thing to think about. But also, don't take anything too seriously, man. Because, you know, like, for example, like, you know, if I post something and someone like critiques form, it's just like, I don't know. It's just, I guess this is sort of a sidetrack rant. You know what? I'm not even going to get into that. That's another podcast episode right there. So that's it. Instagram training videos. Check out those accounts. And I guess plan on seeing me walk that line a little bit more in the future, just to try and kind of grow the platform. It's time to get personal. Life update is happening now, and I just gotta say what's on my chest to make myself feel better here. This is a confession. I dropped Otto on his head. I dropped my baby boy, first time, right on his face. And let me explain. Yeah, I'm gonna paint the picture for you. So he has this little rocker chair that sits on the ground, like 6 inches off the ground. And it has this pad that he sort of sinks into on it, and it's curved. And I went to go pick him up from it, kind of scoop my right hand under his back, supporting his neck a little. And then my other arm went under his butt, and I'm just like lifting him out of it. Well, I should have known better because he's been moving so differently lately, like the last couple of weeks. I mean, he's 6 months old, by the way, almost 6 months old. He's just been moving so differently, doing different stuff, like moving in different ways I don't expect, I guess. But he's way sturdier too, so like I don't have to be as careful picking him up. It was just like a bad combo for what happened. So I pick him up normally. I get like 8 to 12 inches maybe, no higher, above his rocker. And he just throws his head back, arches, and like rolls out of my hands like a freaking grease pig. Seriously, it was so quick. And he... the first thing that hit the rocker, thank God it wasn't the ground. Honestly, I'm so happy this wasn't the wood because he was like, you know, heels overhead, not full scorpion, but like the first contact to this rocker, the padded rocker, was his face though, directly face. And I just freaked out because I was like, you know, watching his neck and everything. And then I grab him and I'm like, dude, I'm just so worried, like if he's okay. Turn him over and he like looks at me and he just looks freaked out. And then literally I was like, Otto, and he just starts screaming, dude, like screaming bloody murder, totally freaked out. Thank God he's okay. Honestly, I felt terrible. I'm so happy it wasn't worse. And then I think I made it up to him though, to kind of flip the story here. We last night went to a party. It was the second location of the salon my wife works at got opened up. It's on the same street, super sick spot, and it's right next to the bike shop and my mom's work, and it's just a cool kind of like location thing. So we went to the party. Otto had a great time. I think he forgot all about me dropping him on his head, because unless the fall actually didn't make him forget just from the impact. Hopefully not. But he got passed around. All the girls are just like all over him. This, you know, he's loving it. I had a great time. Hung out with some buddies I haven't seen in a while. And they also had this bourbon apple cider that had a bunch of floating apples in it. So after I had my fair share and this thing got emptied, I was like, dude, I want one of those apples. I bet it's so good. I had a bite. This bourbon-soaked apple was unbelievable. It was so good that I immediately was just walking up to strangers with this jug and just pointing in their face like, listen, I know you don't know me, but you're going to love this. And that was like my, I guess that was like my greeting, my icebreaker. And it was really funny. Every dude that tried it loved it so much they had more. And we pretty much cleaned that thing out. So that was awesome. And it makes me want to soak a lot of fruit in alcohol. I mean, what a nice little delicious snack, you know? Midday, you just need a little pick-me-up. You get some sugar from that fruit, and you get some vodka at the same time. That would be great. So highly considering that for the future. And other than that, I just have a content recommendation for you. So I've been reading a new book. It's called The Ride of a Lifetime. This is an autobiography by the CEO of Disney. This guy, Robert Iger, who's been the CEO of Disney for like the last 15 years. And I'm not like an insane Disney fan. Like, I like Disney as much as the next person, but not like I'm not a crazy fan. I purely picked it up because it was recommended by someone I follow that reads a ton and is super entrepreneurial, and just talked about, basically, it's his business practices, his principles, and all the experiences leading up to where he's been. I gotta say, the prologue to this book is so insane. He is talking about how he had to open the park for Japan and the day surrounding it and all the bad things that happened, like really, really, really bad things. I mean, stuff to where they were such high-pressure situations and just like horrifying that... not only did he have to figure out how to solve these problems that were arising, again, from halfway across the world, but also had to within minutes put on a face to go do like an opening ceremony presentation, and you hear about his schedule, his itinerary, the pressure. Dude, it's just such a clear example of why not everyone can be like a high-level CEO. And not only that, but since he's been the CEO of Disney, he has quadrupled the value of the company. It's unbelievable. I mean, it's already Disney. It's already huge. How do you do that? So just super cool, very inspiring. And one thing that he actually recommended in the book was a documentary about the best sushi maker in the world. So this was like, this is a content recommendation from a content recommendation. So this documentary is called Jiro Dreams of Sushi. And basically, you can get it on, I think it was Amazon Prime TV that I watched it on. But it's about this whole concept of shokunin, and I'm actually reading it from the book right now. It just means the endless pursuit of perfection for some greater good. So this guy, Jiro, is the most world-renowned sushi maker. He's in his 80s. He's still making sushi. I think he might be like 90-something now. But basically, they do this documentary talking about how he got to where he was and how repetitive his life has been, just dedicating it to sushi, how he's done the same thing every single day, how he's trying to perfect the art, how he believes that he can always get better. And so this Robert Iger, the CEO of Disney, really likes that principle of shokunin, and it's something that's inspired him, got me to watch the documentary. And besides the fact that it's just very inspiring to see someone who does what they do in the best way possible. Like, he's the best in the world. And when you hear about how he trains his apprentices and what they have to do to even be considered good in his eyes is unbelievable. Like, you literally, this one dude is washing rice for like 4 years before he's allowed to cook it. There's another dude who's making this egg fried dish that does it every day for 2 years before the Jiro guy gives him like a nod and says it's actually good. So it's unbelievable just how like persistent these guys are. And honestly, it just really makes me respect the culture. And it was just really cool. And all that aside, you get to just look at the most beautiful pieces of sushi you've ever seen. He's mostly like serving nigiri in this like 10-person restaurant. He's talking about the details of the whole operation. And oh my gosh, it made me want to eat sushi so bad. And guess what? I got to go eat sushi after the bourbon-soaked apples. And it was flawless, incredible. So that's it, guys. Content recommendations, little life update, baby boy's doing all right, potentially nursing a hangover, and that's it. So awesome pod. You guys, very stoked about that periodization talk and just the whole programming for the year. I'm actually kind of surprised at myself for talking for 38 minutes straight with some notes, but it just felt a lot quicker for me and smooth, and I hope you enjoyed it. Hope you enjoyed the new format. And with all that being said, you guys, I will be back next Monday. Last shout out. This topic was given to me by @_AustinNN on Instagram. Dude, huge shout for the programming for the full year. I just thought that was really, really cool. Thank you for the idea. If you guys have an idea or a specific topic you'd like me to cover, just reach out and let me know. It's super helpful because you tend to send me some really good stuff. So thank you for that. And a reminder, 5-star review, leave me a comment on the Apple Podcast app. Another thing we do kind of to market the show is to take a screenshot of the episode on your phone, post it to your Instagram story, and tag me @dialedhealth. I'll reshare it. I really, really appreciate it. It's like the only form of marketing we're doing for the show, and it's really how I'm trying to grow this thing. So that's it. With all that being said, again, I keep saying that. With all that being said, start moving forward. I'm like delirious now. Start moving forward and discover your path. I will see you Monday.